Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure, and he's Mark Potash. Coming up on House Intrigue, guys, a win. How about that? All that and more coming up next. Jason, you and I are sitting here at FedEx Field in the wee hours in the morning. The Bears have just won a game 40-20 that did not feel that much of a blowout.
You and me and Mark Potash, too.
Yes. Well, I said we. I said
the legend.
Just an all-around crazy day for a franchise that has had nothing but crazy days for 5 weeks. Let's start with the game, and then I want to get to the passing of Dick Butkus. 40-20, if you just read the box score, you have no idea of the drama that went on in the second half.
It is the closest 40-20 game you could imagine, because there's all this context to it, Pat. Not just was Washington within 10 points and with the ball in the fourth quarter with time.
And trying to kick a field goal.
Plenty
to go down
of time. But you have this history, this context of the Bears having just blown a similar lead last week. Not even last week, this week. 5 days ago, they were up 28-7 mm-hmm. in the third quarter and blew. It was the worst blown lead in franchise history in terms of points and how late it was in the game. So you have all of that drama, all of that tension. The stress is skyrocketing for anybody that's watching, particularly watching the Bears side of it. And then it just kind of, they miss the field goal, and then Justin Fields goes with a 56-yard touchdown pass down the sideline to DJ Moore, and it's over.
Which was a 2-yard pass and a 54-yard run on a really tight throw that very easily could have been a pick six the other way, but it wasn't. And I think that's worth pointing out, because this is a team that had lost 14 straight games. We were looking for the banana peel all the way through the second half, and the Bears looked like they were walking right toward it. Potsy, can you remember a game like this? I know how much you love being put on the spot, but this just felt so bizarre in that second half. It just felt like it was slipping away almost every minute.
Well, it definitely felt like that, but I got to tell you, Pat, I think it's almost just like it's the opposite of last week, that they survived that things went their way. The missed field goal, the DPI they got picked up, just all the things that happened to them. They had a bad snap and gained 8 yards out of it. And that pick six, that could have been a pick six, turned into a touchdown. I mean, that to me, that they survived that legitimizes everything that happened before it, as opposed to last week, where I think what happened delegitimized everything that happened in the early going. I think that's the big difference. I think they can hang their hat on this game and what happened early in the game a lot more than they did last week. I think that's probably the most positive sign overall for the Bears after this one.
Pat, let's talk about Justin Fields. An interesting game for him, because he was on fire in the first half. And he second half, though, he was 3-for-9 for under 100 yards. But his overall game rounds out to 15 of 29, 282 yards, 4 touchdown passes, a 125 passer rating. This is the second time in Justin Fields' career that he has gone over 100 in passer rating back-to-back games.
This is the second best game he's ever played as a passer, and the best game he ever played as a passer was 5 days ago.
I find his game today impressive, even though things went quiet in the third quarter and well into the fourth, and it allowed the Commanders to creep back in. Justin Fields did a lot of things that you want to see him do, and Washington was clearly playing the defense that everyone is playing against him now, of kind of cage him in the pocket, do not let him run on you, make him beat you as a passer. And he did.
Yeah, he
and
did.
And the way that he did, I appreciate, one, that he was able to kind of ride out that rough patch in the third quarter and into the fourth and finish like he did with the 56-yard touchdown pass. But it's so encouraging for the Bears that he was just pounding DJ Moore, just getting the ball to DJ Moore, being very aggressive with his throws to DJ Moore. That's why he's here. Justin Fields has never had a receiver like that. Allen Robinson, Darnell Mooney, who was their good receiver last year? N'Keal Harry. Justin Fields has never had a wide receiver like this. That's why the Bears got DJ Moore in that trade, was so that he would finally have this kind of weapon. We've been waiting for him to go to DJ Moore relentlessly and aggressively and trust him to make plays. He did it a little bit against Denver. He did it a lot tonight. And DJ Moore ends up with 230 yards receiving, 3 touchdowns. He's just short of Alshon Jeffrey's single game record of 249 yards in a game.
That was in the Metrodome, wasn't it, Potsy? The Alshon Jeffrey game?
Against the Vikings.
Against the Vikings, and it started early. Third down and 9, the Bears are not a good third down team. 58 yards to DJ Moore. 3 plays later, third down and 14, 20 yards to DJ Moore for a touchdown. The Bears go up 7-0. To me, what was the most impressive part about Fields was the Bears clearly had the strategy of trying to spread him and shred him through the air. And then you figure once they get a big lead, then they can lean on their run game, which was pretty effective today. But you lose Roschon Johnson in the second quarter to a concussion. Khalil Herbert's leg bends the wrong way on a Justin Fields throw. He could be in some serious trouble physically. But he goes to the sideline, runs, tries to come back, takes one hand off, essentially crumples.
Crumples
at the line of scrimmage, shakes his head no, jogs off. Travis Homer, their third running back, leaves the game with a hamstring, I believe. And Kari Blassingame, their fullback, winds up with 8 carries for 26 yards. And that's not a shocking number, but they really needed someone they could lead on. He had not had 8 carries in his life coming into this game, correct?
He had 3 all with the Titans. He had never carried the ball with the Bears.
So Justin Fields not only... He not only had to be a good passer, Potsy, in the fourth quarter, he had to be their entire offense because they didn't have anybody who they could hand the ball off to and run some clock.
I think, not that I disagree with you, but I think my star of the game would be the offensive line because this is a not very good team that had one element that could beat a team like the Bears handily, and that's their defensive line against the Bears' offensive line. You know, the Commanders against, like, the Bills, their defensive line doesn't really make a difference because they're outmatched and they lose 37-3. But against a team like the Bears, they can take that one element, as you know, against an offensive line that is was just as jumbled today as it always has been. They could have dominated this game and won 40-20, and it held up even with an injury to Lucas Patrick, and then they rotated Tevin Jenkins in, and I think that was, and a lot of those passes, a lot of the key passes, he had time to throw. So I think long term, if you're going to look at something that is sustainable, I think it's the one element I think is the offensive line holding when it was up against a formidable defensive front.
Yeah, and they're going to get Braxton Jones back as soon as 2 weeks from now. I think Larry Borum's been pretty good, to tell you the truth. But that line did look good. The Bears had 5 sacks today. That is 3 more than they had all season coming in. And the Commanders only had 3. So if you would have told us before the game that the Bears would lead the Commanders in sacks, I think we would have been fairly surprised by that whole thing. Jason, let's talk defense real quick. Matt Eberflus blitzed. Matt Eberflus did weird non-Matt Eberflusy things, in part because the guys he was playing with were just a bunch of no-names. By the end of the game, they came in without Eddie Jackson or Jalen Johnson, and then it seemed like they were losing somebody, whether it was to cramps or grabbing a hamstring or something, almost all the way through the game.
He doesn't have a lot of choice to begin with, Pat, even if everybody's healthy, because this pass rush just isn't there. And it's the second biggest liability you can have as a football team. It's the biggest after having a quarterback problem. Mm-hmm. And it is something that's going to be problematic for them all year. And as soon as he figures out something that works, teams will adjust. Teams will start picking it up. So Matt Eberflus will constantly have to be coming up with new ideas to get some kind of pass rush going. He did it today. We've been waiting. I mean, he needed to start doing this probably second game of the year. It should have been apparent that this was going to be necessary at the latest. We are seeing the creativity now, and I think that's positive. That's also something, that's one of several things on a list that I think they need to spend a little extra time on now they have this extended break between now and hosting the Vikings.
And Sam Howell was awesome in the second half. Finished 37 of 51 for 388, 2 touchdowns and a pick, a passer rating of 99.1. But Potsy, the Commanders handed the ball off to a running back 6 times all game. That's... I think we've seen people play the Bears very differently than that, with the idea that they'd beat up on the Bears' front 7.
Yeah, I think it's maybe not surprising that they thought that they could beat the Bears with Sam Howell. But Sam Howell has done that before. I mean, he's a kind of a litmus test for a lot of teams. If you're good, you can beat him. If you're bad, he'll beat you. And I think overall, I know the numbers, especially in the second half, look better. But remember, they were fighting from behind, so I think it was a little bit skewed. And I think overall, especially in the first half, the Bears won that battle.
We mentioned earlier that the Bears haven't had a regular, boring game week in ever. This year, at least, you know, dating back to, you know, you have the biggest rivalry game in the league in week one, and then Allen Williams in week two and three, and Chase Claypool and Justin Fields talking about coaching. You've got this whole thing, and Potsy, there was another one thrown into the mix today, and it was a real world problem or sad issue, and that's the death of Dick Butkus at 80. He died in his sleep overnight in Malibu, California. That broke just as we got to the game. And you did a lovely job eulogizing him in your story about exactly what he meant to the Bears.
Yeah, I have to admit that's really an emotional thing for me, having grown up watching Dick Butkus play and knowing exactly what he meant to the Bears. And he's an interesting guy, Dick Butkus. It's got tough. We just saw him week one on the field, and you know he didn't look great, but you know didn't think he was about to pass away. So that's always just kind of stunning. But just it's hard for me to even explain, even though I wrote about it, exactly what it is about Dick Butkus. All I can tell you is that 50 years after he played his last game, he still has an impact on people who never saw him play, because people who did see him play pass it down to the next generation. So everybody has an appreciation. Talked to Tyler Scott in the locker room. He's a guy whose dad always talked to him about ex-Bears. And he said that's the first thing his dad told him was about Dick Butkus. So for him, he's one of the few players on this team who was really impacted by that. First thing he said he thought about his dad first. But that's an example of a dad telling the kid, I've been watching Dick Butkus highlights since I was 8 years old. And that's why Dick Butkus is still larger than life today, 50 years later, because he had that much of an impact. And and the other thing about Dick Butkus is, you know, everything you hear about him is you know, kind of this larger than life kind of monster player. But Dick Butkus was also just an outstanding, just a good fundamental football player. He was he had great hands, he had great instincts. He was more than just this cartoon character, maniacal player. And he had great hands. I think he had like 27 fumble recoveries, 22 interceptions. If you look at the highlights of Dick Butkus, you could go ahead right now and just look at any. When you look at these highlights, they highlight all the crazy hits and stuff like that. But look how he tackles. Watch how he tackles. He's a textbook tackler. He rarely missed tackles. He was just. So I guess my point is, he gets this reputation as this like monstrous player, you know, who crosses the line. But really, he was the reason he's Dick Butkus is because he was a great football player, and that's, I think, I appreciate that most of all. So tough loss for the Bears, tough loss for the organization, tough loss for Bears fans, but I'm glad personally anyway they have a lot of great memories of watching Dick Butkus. Like myself, a South Side Chicagoan, I was brought home from a hospital six blocks from CVS High School when he was like a sophomore at vocational in 1959, and ever since then, you know, Dick Butkus was all there ever was to know about the Chicago Bears, even when you had Gale Sayers on the same team.
And for a franchise that has so many larger-than-life former players, many of them still walking around town and enjoying being Dan Hampton. Nobody enjoys being Jim McMahon more than Jim McMahon does. Was he somehow a tier above the Singletaries, the McMahons, the Hamps, the Dents, those guys that on most other franchises would be, you know, top three players they've ever had?
Yeah, well, he was for a couple of reasons. For one thing, he was just that good. If you watch him play, I mean, he played on poor teams. For a guy to stand out like that on poor teams is really unbelievable. But also the era he played in, I think that was an advantage for him. You know, I was just joking with Tyler that you know, he'd have been kicked out of about half the games he played in today. So he played in an era where you could be that kind of player. He just did it at an entirely different level, where players who you watch some of these documentaries, these highlight things, and they have players on other teams, just talking about how scared they were, how fearful they were of Dick Butkus. He was like, I guess the best way I can think of putting it was, he brought out kind of the meathead in every Bears fan, but it was real. You know, this idea, like I talked about in the story, that, you know, wow, when you played the Bears, you might have got beat, but they beat the crap out of you. You know, that's kind of a silly notion, but Dick Butkus made it real. He made watching the Bears fun when the Bears were not fun to watch, because he was Dick Butkus. And I think that's why he's a legend whose legend is as real as it can be. It's not, you know, so things always get exaggerated as time goes on and the generations retell the stories. But you watch any highlight film of Dick Butkus, or talk to anybody who actually saw him play, and you know everything they say about him, good and bad, was true. It was real.
And he never played in a playoff game.
He only played on two winning teams. I can't remember the number, 53 and 84 or something, and four or whatever. It was, he played in a bad era, went 1-13 one year. He was just everything that I guess fans wanted to be in a football player. Yeah, and I think that was the difference between him and Sayers. Nobody could run like Sayers, but everybody had it in him to want to hit like Dick Butkus. And so I think that's why everything about him resonated with Bears fans, and that's what made rooting for Dick Butkus even on bad teams, you know, such a kind of a great thing and a great childhood memory for myself. I know that.
And Pat, his personality transcended his playing career, where he was such an icon all the way to the end. Every time you would see Dick Butkus on the sideline at Soldier Field doing one of those, like, you know, cheers with the crowd during a timeout, people went crazy for Dick Butkus being there. Matt Eberflus, at the start of his post-game press conference today on probably the biggest win Matt Eberflus has ever had.
I mean, it's one of four. It's a short conversation, yes.
Mentioned Dick Butkus and the great relationship that they had. How special it was to Matt Eberflus to get to know him and be around him and be able to talk shop with him. And this is someone who was, to the end, very present within the city and within, even though he didn't live in Chicago anymore, but very present to people in the city, very present to people in the organization.
He's somebody, too, Potsy, that wasn't afraid to tell it like it is. I mean, I've seen him at the last three or four Super Bowls and then talk to him, you know, for stories every time. And every time he sits there and goes, I don't know what that Matt Nagy did with Justin Fields, or, hey, if you're going to blame people in the Bears organization, you need to look at ownership. Like, this isn't a rah-rah guy. This is a guy whose beliefs and whose opinions of the Bears, I think, fell in line with your average Chicagoan a lot more than the other way around.
Yeah, he was outspoken even when he was on the Bears. He wrote a book called Stop Action, where I think it's about the 1971 season, and he said a bunch of things about Mike Lucci and the Lions, and they had a great rivalry. And even then, at the time, even then, it riled up, you know, the Lions. They weren't happy about what he said. But, you know, Dick Butkus was here's another thing I like about Dick Butkus. He's a Hall of Famer who played special teams throughout his career. Not only that, but he made plays on special teams. He caught you can look for the highlights on YouTube. He caught two extra points on bad snaps. And one of them's great. One of them's a great one against the Eagles, where he catches the ball and then just hands the ball to the defensive player, and the defensive player just snaps, yep. You know, just swats it away. It's just, I mean, everything about him, like I said, was real. He did all that stuff. He was, you know, he missed all training camp one year and with injuries at the end of his career. I think it was in 73, you know, and his legs were shot. That caused problems with the Bears and the medical team and stuff like that. Lawsuits, this and that. But anyway, he missed the entire 73 preseason, gets into the first game, 15 tackles. And he's Dick Butkus again. Eventually, he did wear down in 73, and it was kind of a tough ending for him. But he was always as good as ever. He was always as good as advertised and everything you expected to see of him. So I'm just glad that his legacy will live on even more so than almost any great Hall of Fame player.
Class move by the Commanders before the game to hold a moment of silence for Dick Butkus. And I would imagine, given how iconic he is to the league, that's going to be throughout the league on Sunday and Monday.
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, that's another great tribute to Dick Butkus is, you know, we've seen Ray Lewis since he, you know, the game evolves, players evolve, better, there are always better players. We've seen Ray Lewis, we've seen Lawrence Taylor, technically a linebacker or whatever, do even greater things, but yet the Dick Butkus Award is given to the best linebacker at the high school level, the college level, and the NFL level. 50 years after he played his last game. That's how much he meant to the NFL and to all people who either knew about him, watched him play, and just appreciated what he did for the game.
Jason, I'll leave you with this. The Bears now go into the vaunted mini bye, which was the savior of their season last year for 3 weeks. Being able to go in off of a win versus a loss, what does that mean just for the vibe of things around Halas Hall and maybe even the city?
Well, it takes the pressure off the Bears for a week, but it doesn't change anything, Pet. Right. I mean, this is still a 1-4 team that has only beaten the Commanders, which is not a very good team. Right. And they have a long list of stuff that they need to address during this time. Like last year when they had this break, this kind of break, I think it was maybe even a day longer because they played on a Thursday and then the following Monday. But when you have this extra time, last year they retooled the offense. They came out with a totally different game plan against the Patriots on Monday Night Football. You need that kind of drastic change this weekend too. Leading into the Minnesota game.
To defense.
You need to look at everything. Even as an offense, you cannot be content with just last week and this week. There are still some things you need to deal with. I think just a quick to-do list for them, finish this Chase Claypool situation. Do not let this linger on for another week of Matt Eberflus flailing at trying to answer questions, of players being asked about it, of this kind of limbo of what are they going to do with him. Chase Claypool needs to be off the roster by Monday. Secondly, you need to retool your defense, and I think for Matt Eberflus, that should involve retooling his defensive staff. He should designate someone to be the defensive coordinator, even if he wants to still call plays on Sundays. He needs to reorganize that now that he's got the time to do it. This would have been a tough last couple of weeks to pull that off. But also, he and Luke Getsy need to do a deep dive on this offense. This isn't fixed. This isn't just problem solved because you scored 40 against the Commanders, 28 last week against the Broncos. It's promising. They're headed the right way, but I think that they still need to really look at that. They still really need to dial in with Justin Fields on his passing performance. Again, I was totally impressed with him today. They forced him to pass, and he did it, but I think there's still a lot of work to do on both sides of the ball.
He completed passes to three people today. One of them was DJ Moore, and the other two were tight ends, Cole Kmet and Robert Tonyan. That does not an offense make. If DJ Moore wants to catch 230 yards worth of balls every week, sure, but otherwise they need more diversity. They need to figure out what's going on at running back. If Khalil Herbert's going to be gone, Donta Foreman has been inactive for 3 weeks now, but he's not a bad guy to bring off the bench if you need that. Yes, they have a long way to go, but I think getting the extra couple of days off a win is probably good for their psyche and self-esteem and for those around town too. Jason, God forbid something terribly interesting happens this weekend. If so, we'll jump on in. But otherwise, we will be back next week to talk about the second NFC North game on the Bears' schedule, the Minnesota Vikings. You can read what Mark wrote about Dick Butkus. Again, a wonderful story. And also, Rick Morrissey wrote a column. The lead to the column will make you smile. So go ahead and give it a read. Jason and I tackled the game tonight, and we will do all the necessary cleanup work tomorrow. Check that out on the Sun-Times website, on the app, or pick up a paper. Until then, he's Mark, he's Jason, I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.